We got a guest, George, in the studio. How are you this morning?
Yeah, brilliant. Thanks. How are you?
Yeah, welcome. Yeah, good. Emotional rollercoaster of a morning, but yeah, good. A lot of already stuff to think about and stuff to do when keeping Gaetano in hearts and minds in terms of how to approach doing anything going forward. But yeah, congratulations. I mean, reviews editor of Calliope X, we've spoken to the other George before on this program.
Legend.
George Mouratidis, and also co-creator of Thin Red Lines.
Yes, and I started that with Tabani Chuma 6 years ago, yeah.
And congratulations, sold out event next Friday, I want to say.
Yes.
At the Wheeler Centre.
Mm-hmm.
Very auspicious, yeah. Very good. Tell us a bit about the work that you do with Thin Red Lines, maybe to start off with, and then maybe some of your personal practice.
Yeah, for sure. Thin Red Lines started as a result of just two new friends having a conversation about poetry events in NAM and wanting to be able to invite people who maybe didn't have an interest in poetry. There's lots of great open mic nights, but as we kept curating it, so essentially we program four different artists and it runs four times a year. I think just naturally because of both of our political sensibilities, artistic sensibilities, it does have a social justice angle just that naturally emerges. And we give the stage to these four artists to do whatever they want for 10 to 20 minutes, which is kind of different to how a writer would normally be programmed. It gives them a bit more space to experiment, and it's quite intimate as well because it's in this kind of bar sort of setting. And yeah, it's just kept growing in its own way because people are really craving that and craving this kind of connection. And I hesitate to use the term authenticity. Maybe earnestness is better. Mm. Yeah, and so it somehow has just kind of become this self-funding, self-proliferating being in and of itself that we just sort of facilitate, which is pretty stunning. So,
and I mean, if people are answering so positively to it, it's addressing a need that's present.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's something about connectivity that maybe even though some of the names that we program are like names, right? And people go, wow, what a lineup. But when you get there, it's not this kind of hoity-toity, clicky kind of atmosphere at all. In fact, I think a lot of people I see also go on their own and feel comfortable enough to be there on their own. You don't necessarily need to talk to anyone if you don't want to, but it's, yeah, it has kind of an open, warm hearth aspect that then allows for the magic of whatever the artists are doing to take place without that kind of I don't quite know how to put it, and I don't want to neg too much on other situations, but maybe the formality is gone.
Like an institutional restriction or something.
Yeah, exactly. That kind of more like emotional kind of gatekeeping or something.
And there's a link between, I guess, more broadly what you do with Calliope X and maybe in your personal, I mean, tell me if I'm wrong, but I was interested in the manifesto for Calliope X. You lot have chosen a Yannis Ritsos quote that says, like, we sing not to listen to ourselves, but to sing together or whatever.
Mm-mm-mm.
And it just made me reflect on how this sort of inclusive practice actually speaks to your, I mean, I know George Mouratidis, dedicated lifelong anarchist.
So in
that terms of like that communal aspect, that political undercurrent that underpins all this together, and how I guess the artistic community here is actually devoid of that mostly.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, with Calliope X, there's two parts, and also I only came on in sort of the past year and a half, and that was through George's invitation, which was so lovely, essentially because I'm also a bookseller, and so doing the reviews, editing, you know, I can get books, I know what's kind of coming out, and I've got a really strong interest in small independent press and things like that. But yeah, with, I guess I'll start with maybe like the arts community. I think there is a lot of connectivity, but a lot of things take place in spaces that feel very, as you say, kind of devoid of kind of that connection and uplifting. And, you know, obviously we live in late capitalism, and so the arts has become also an industry. And for people to try to sustain themselves, there's this pressure to think towards the individual, or even the sort of warping of the notion of like genius in contemporary times, which is completely at odds with sort of its ancient roots. And to constantly self-promote, or, you know, having a yarn with someone is called networking, you know, things like that. And sometimes like the nature of these conversations is very like, oh, what have you been up to? Or, you know, what do you do? And, you know, I think with Calliope X, there's sort of this really deep interest in what other people are doing and finding ways to, yeah, uplift that, promote that, find a space for it, because it's exciting, and these different forms of storytelling and expression are crucial to fundamental change. And also, yeah, I'm quite interested in you using this term devoid, because then I'm thinking like the void as well. Yeah, but I think like it's not, for Calliope X, it's also not just about arts practice, but that's also about kind of diasporic community as well, and our responsibilities on stolen land, and a priority as well of maybe not centering English as the primary language all the time too. There's a big translation component. Yeah.
And a bit with all of this stuff is viewing, wanting to view art as a revolutionary practice, rather than, at least the way I feel it when interact with, I mean, going to the Calliope X poetry night that you've had last year, or even listening to your album that we played a song off, 2 weeks ago or whatever it was, that there was, which everyone can get on Bandcamp, Georgia Curtis, Lucas George on Bandcamp. But that there is a real revolutionary practice, and there's a real drive to push art beyond consumeristic capitalist models of, one, growth, but also expression, I think, more pointedly.
Yeah, definitely. I think art is, by its very nature, revolutionary, because when it's allowed to flourish and be experimented with, its form challenges the parameters of imposed reality. And I guess what I mean by that is, you know, we sort of live in this very kind of like rationalist paradigm that's like, you know, this is a coffee cup, this is a piece of paper, this is a microphone, etc. And art opens up these different ways of communicating what we all feel, which is aspects of the ineffable, that which cannot be described but is felt. And there are many different ways of kind of tapping into this. Some of them are mythologies, and different knowledge systems talk about this a lot. But to do that in and of itself is revolutionary. I guess also there's so much, I'll talk directly to poetry because that's what I mostly nerd around, but, you know, a lot of poetry does this more directly and speaking towards particular political issues that are both the personal and the political, because you can't divorce those two. And that can be really, really effective in creating further awareness. You're kind of using rhythm and different ways of putting words together to to challenge the status quo and to challenge increasing forms of oppression. But yeah, I think that a lot of the arts practices that we see that do get rewarded kind of just further perpetuate a little bit of something that's quite static, that doesn't do anything, it's not activating anything. And that's because it is sort of being churned out as a product rather than as something coming from, you know, the body creating and revealing its own revolutions.
I guess we were privy to some of these machinations when we went and saw the Khaled Sabsabi panel with Ghassan Haj and I forget now who else was on the panel, but we saw that there was a limit to how these institutions can respond to crises and can respond more broadly to what are the actual needs or requirements of art to do, especially in a time of genocide, like how reflexive they need to be rather than self-referential. I don't know. I guess what is your thoughts on creating these? I mean, I guess your practice is to create alternatives to these big name institutions that kind of corral well-meaning artists into, I don't know, subservience to whatever boring cultural hegemonies going on in Australia at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you buy into the big naming of it all, then that breeds complacency. I still think if you have a success at the big institution, sick, take the money and run and keep doing your thing. But simultaneously, the importance of having our own spaces that are self-created that maybe aren't entirely based on, you know, expansion or making heaps of money or whatever. You know, I think, say, with Thin Red Lines, it's funny because sometimes now that it's sort of really, it's quite steady, like it's self-perpetuating. And of course, there's a lot of work that goes into it. But, you know, sometimes people like to me, oh, you're going to move to, you know, a bigger venue. And obviously we're doing that for Melbourne Writers Festival, which is great. But that's because we've just been invited to do that. That's kind of a one-off. That sort of idea that the next steps is like this constant expansion is sort of antithetical, I think, to when you are talking about like being anti-capitalist. You know, it's taking a step back from that. That's not to say within like bigger institutions and things that good work isn't being made. But as we saw at that talk, this sort of, it's sort of like you have to hold the belief within yourself that it's, you know, the institution exists. You can't erase that. You can't just ignore that. But to believe that they're the be all and end all and that's the end goal, is really, really false. It's sort of at the same time holding the understanding that you can create your own spaces. And, you know, it's everyone talking at that evening until the very end, it was like everyone's drunk the institutional Kool-Aid, right? Like, oh, we can just fix this through processes and submitting this like form or something. I don't even know these words because they're just weird marketing buzzwords to me and they kind of make me feel unwell. But that's not where the root of the problem lies. And I think, you know, just before, you know, we went on now, sort of talking about that idea of, you know, things that are more affect-based and things that are more reason-based. And that belief that you can solve things through creating a committee and a form and, you know, adhering to the due diligence processes that were invented by who exactly?
Mm-hmm.
And especially on this country, right? Is going to fix what is inherently rooted in immense racism and colonization. And like, that's just an example. It's just like an aerial aspect of a deep-rooted plant that's kind of going everywhere. Just remove yourself from the Kool-Aid, take what money you can, take the prestige you can, because that helps you proliferate. And that also gives you an ability to then also help promote others, you know?
And create spaces that are separate.
Yeah,
and
absolutely.
And integral to the functioning of a democracy and even an internal democratic process. Like we were talking just before about how central, and I mean, you were saying as well, how central revolution is and a revolutionary practice is to creating art. It's seemingly forgotten in modern Western countries, the importance of, and leftist movements. I mean, I shudder at the term leftist, but I mean, just because it's too broad, I don't want to be lumped in with, some people, but to say that like a real artistic practice and a real cultural revolution is an integral part. I mean, that was Mao's whole push, was a cultural revolution, was an artistic revolution, was a redefining of what reality can be through imagining a new world, artistically even. And I mean, at the May Day rallies on Thursdays, we saw, and every time Anak Bayan, the Filipino revolutionary organization, comes up, they have incredible props. I saw in the Philippines May Day protests, they had like a 8-foot Donald Trump cardboard cutout that made him look demonic, and they just gave everyone hammers and they smashed it to bits. Like, I think that's an awesome artistic practice. I don't know. So it's really exciting to hear that you have these projects going and that there are these amazing things. And I mean, if people want to know where to find you and all the things that you do and all the artists that you promote, where should they go?
Unfortunately, it's Instagram, but just via Thin Red Lines. Just come to one of those events. I have some stuff published online, but I'm also not just me. Go to the Calliope X website. They've got so many different issues. I think we've got a full 6 now with such an incredible breadth and depth of incredible writers and poets and different artists, and different interviews as well, which is well worth checking out.
And just one final question, maybe before, I don't want to take up too much of your Saturday morning, but perhaps if you had any words of advice for any up and coming artists and how to not be politically mediocre, how to not be swayed by powers that tell you to stay neutral and to really, shudder at the term, but speak your truth. But
yeah, I mean, I think if you're new to sort of calling yourself an artist, and that's not something that's just dependent on an age bracket, that can be pretty scary and weird, and obviously you want validation, and we all need it to keep going as well, to have our work received. Stick to your guns. Like, what's your gut telling you? Let your art inform you. I just keep thinking back to one of my favorite poets is Ariana Rhines, and in this interview that she did with Rebecca Tamash, it's online if you want to search for it, she talks about the body sort of revealing its truths, its revolution. I just really feel that, you know, when we're talking about what we're conveying, it's not this, the precision comes later. Go with that feeling space that's already emerging. And if you find that you're making work that doesn't feel inherently political, like, go to a rally, connect with community, have chats with people outside of your sphere. Like, if you're not already angry or upset, then, you know, maybe that's just not connecting.
It's time to pop the bubble.
Yeah, exactly. Because this is the time we live in. We're in collapse of empire. Like, feel your way into it.
Yo, thank you so much for being with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
No, that's all right. We're going to go to the next section, but before that, we're going to go with a song. I talked to a mutual friend of ours, Agapi, from Democritus Workers League. And she recommended we play this as a Greek May Day song. And I mean, like all Greeks, I think I poorly translated the Google lyrics, like Google Translate the lyrics. And it's about being heartbroken or pining for some girl, but on May Day or something like that.
It's very Greek.
All right. Thank you very much, George.
Thank you.